Zone is brought to you by CC Power Sports of Louisville, home of Kawasaki, Yamaha, Suzuki, Can-Am, Sea-Doo, SSR, and Bad Boy zero-turn mowers. CC Power Sports of Louisville offers the best winter discounts on all motorcycles, ATVs, side-by-sides, and personal watercraft in the area. Beat cabin fever and come into CC Power Sports of Louisville. I-65, 7 minutes south of the airport.
You know what time it is.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Jason Anderson.
Powered by CC Power Sports of Louisville.
It's 2019. You know, rosters are fluid. Well, my job as I see it is to be very, very honest with our players, and I expect the same in return. I want them to be honest with me in terms of what their expectations are, what I thought they did well this past year, what I think they need to work on. I have to be as honest as a heart attack with them. So to say that, like, hey, we sit here and we're ready to go for 2019-20 in terms of what our roster will look like, that would probably be inaccurate because I don't know.
Advance to the second round against Kentucky, and, you know, as crazy as it sounds, I mean, to go toe-to-toe with the Wildcats, and, you know, they made a couple more plays than we did, but it was a heck of a ball game and certainly belonged on that floor, I hope. So I think it remains to be seen, but I think we've certainly helped our cause here over the last couple of years.
We won't take the best available player approach and then try to fit him in to a roster. We'll certainly hone in on some positions. Right now there are no positions open, but, you know, we're always looking.
Come on, everybody.
You're in the Zone.
In the Zone.
The Zone with Jason Anderson. Powered by CC Power Sports of Louisville.
Was that the Leitner game? Oh, sorry to call it that. 104, Duke 104, Kentucky 103. The Sean Woods game, we like to call it.
Want to be part of the show? Give us a call at 267-9680.
Now.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Over the dike. You know,
really?
Whoa, it came hard.
Powered by CC Power Sports of Louisville on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
I'm going to choke a live chicken on the air. All right, we continue with our coverage, hanging out at the Final Four in Minneapolis. Jason Anderson with you as we got one more hour to go today. And then, of course, do what we can to bring a jam-packed show tomorrow as well. Already, if you've missed it, we've already talked to Ben Howland, Kermit Davis, Ron Hunter, Robbie Hummel. And then that was Nate Robinson right there, three-time NBA slam dunk champion, Nate Robinson. That was a fun interview. I didn't know what to expect with Nate, but that was fun. Our Final Four Radio Row coverage presented by UPS Jobs, Baptist Health, Sports Medicine, fueled by Kroger and delivered by Papa John's. Joined now by Rick Bozich from WDRB and WDRB.com. Rick, I certainly appreciate you joining us. How old were you the first time you dunked?
I actually did dunk in my driveway at home. I was probably 18 before
18.
I don't do much. Okay. I could barely, if nobody was around, I could just keep going over and over again. And with a ball that was underinflated that I could palm, I could dunk.
Well, I could dunk a volleyball. That's
yeah.
It. Because like, it's not fair. Like Nate Robinson was like, I was 5'5 and 14 years old when I dunked. I'm like, but that's not fair. Like, you understand that's not fair. Like, in the genes of life, like, you won the lottery that I'm, you know, 6'3 and I've never been able to dunk an actual basketball before. You know, like, that's not fair to be 5'5, 14 years old and be dunking. I guess it's, you know, save some for the rest of us. That's all I'm saying. You know. Oh, well. Rick Bozich, WDRB and WDRB.com. I want to start with the most recent, and then we can work our way back. So Chris Mack yesterday, he had his press conference, 30 minutes long, the postseason, end of season press conference, state of the program, whatever you want to call it, as he went through, you know, the Q&As and sat there for a long time and gave everybody an opportunity to ask all those questions, which is interesting because we were talking on Monday or Tuesday. It's like, man, is Chris Mack going to have a press conference, a postseason press conference? And then, you know, Kenny Klein sends out an email like an hour later. What did you take away from that press conference? Is there anything overriding sort of the theme, the thought from hearing Chris Mack talk for a good half hour about his team and what next year could look like?
Yeah, I don't know, a lot of different things. He seemed like a guy who was generally happy that he had installed his culture, but not totally happy with, you know, the way the whole season unfolded. He brought back several times, you know, the way they finished the season, last 10 games. It was really the last 13 games that they went, 4-9. So that stuck with them. I got the feeling that there's still going to be some flux in the roster. I know we got the three walk-ons who are put their name in the portal, but you got two guys who had their name in the draft, and who knows if some other guys will follow them out. They're obviously, he said rosters are fluid, so that tells me that they're looking at grad transfers or regular transfers who have to sit out a year. He specifically said they wouldn't take another freshman, which is understandable and wise since they already have six coming in. It makes it tough to balance your classes. And then the other thing that he didn't like the idea that they're opening the season against Miami.
Oh yeah, no, I can't imagine any coach would be excited about that, right? Like the first game of the season is a conference
game. If you're playing a conference game against a team you should beat at home, you're probably okay with it. But to play a conference game, your first game of the year on the road, no coach wants to do that.
Yeah, the Big Ten started adopting this when they went to 20 games, and they've got those two early ones. But it's not the first game of the season. I haven't looked and I haven't checked, and so I haven't heard, but. Is this going to be a yearly thing, or is this a one-time deal to sort of present the ACC network and the expanded conference games? And, hey, right out of the gate, we're going to have some ACC conference games.
They haven't said. But, yeah, you're right. The double pressure this year of going from 18 to 20 games and then having the ACC network debut and trying to break through the clutter of the opening week of the season of, everybody's not that many fans. In most leagues aren't paying attention yet to college basketball, but in the ACC they are, and you want to get people to say, well, this is the year you're going to have to, come watch us on the ACC network. So I get it, but I also get it where coaches, especially coaches who have to play road games, are not going to be thrilled. And I think Louisville played this year. They played Michigan State at home in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, so they're probably going to face a road game in that too.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, it's a very good point. I like what the Big Ten did when they went to it, and it was, okay, you've got – non-conference, all right, here's two conference games. You can get back into non-conference. Okay, and now here's the full stretch of Big Ten conference games. I like that. It sort of broke up the non-conference a little bit. It made you feel like, you were, all right, here's some conference games, right? Like, hey, everybody else is playing non-conference, and now you got some conference games thrown in there. I don't know what to think of Miami and an ACC game right out of the gates for Louisville. That's going to be interesting, and I'm hoping that it's a one-year deal because – Maybe I like the slow burn. I like the fact that I don't have to watch it on ESPN3. I like that. That's nice. Isn't it amazing, though? We talked about it. Kermit Davis was with us, and he said, from Middle Tennessee to, Ole Miss, he's like, every single one of our games is nationally televised with the SEC Network, and it's just, I can, talk to a kid who's in L.A. that can watch our games, and I can recruit there, that it's, there's no regional recruiting anymore because of national TV. And it's like, yeah, that's true. And then we look at Louisville and we go, like, they went from, the AAC to the ACC, and you see less of their games on TV. Like, it's just crazy to think about that.
Yeah, I don't know why that is, other than, ESPN has a limited bandwidth or whatever, and I think at some point they're conditioning all of us to watch the games on our phone or on our tablet and pay per game to watch it, or buy a buy a package for the season to watch a chunk of them. I know in the Big Ten, several of the Big Ten games early in the year for all schools are not carried on the Big Ten network, which they've got three or four channels during the football season, but they try and lean on you to buy Big Ten Plus, so you can. That's another $10 that they can gouge you for November and December to watch games.
Rick Bozich, WDRB and WDRB.com is our guest. The AP Coach of the Year Award announcement came out about 15 minutes ago or so. Chris Beard wins the Coach of the Year Award. Kelvin Sampson came in second. Mike Young at Wofford, who was on with Bobby V earlier today, came in third. Then Nate Oates from Buffalo, Rick Barnes at Tennessee, Tony Bennett, Virginia, and Mark Few, Gonzaga. And I'm looking down to see other coaches that might have received some votes. Izzo, Painter, Roy, Beeline, K, Musselman. Did you vote in the AP Coach of the Year? And if you did, which one did you vote for?
Yes, I did. I voted for Beard. I voted for Painter second. Beard, first of all, what he's doing at Texas Tech is remarkable. It's not basketball country. I mean, they've went through Tubby and Gillespie and Knight and a bunch of Gerald Myers. I can go back a number of years, and they're the ones who stopped along with Kansas State, I guess, this year, right? Kansas is streaking the Big 12, and they yep. lost, and they lose three or four starters from last year, and Thor picked seventh in the league preseason. And I think the voting had to be done, might have been right before the NCAA tournament, and luckily what they've done in the NCAA, but definitely it was before last weekend, and what he's done in the NCAA tournament has just enhanced that. And, you know, you watch them play, they're not a fluke. They play top five, top ten level defense. Offensively, they could be a little bit better, but they're a good team. He's a good coach. And at Texas Tech, tip your hat to him. But Painter, I think you can make a case for Painter. I mean, I thought Purdue was going to finish sixth or seventh in the Big Ten this year. I mean, they lost, Haas, and they lost Edwards, and they lost Mathias, and the other guard. And I thought, you know, Harms is like a project, and Carson Edwards I knew was really good. I didn't think he was that good. And, you know, Klein's a one-trick pony, and Nodell Eastern can't shoot. And it's like, how does he get this team to tie for the Big Ten regular season title and make the Elite Eight and could have easily been in the Final Four? That's a pretty good job of knowing, recruiting to what you want and then getting guys to do what you want them to do. And that's what coaching's all about.
You and I didn't talk about that before, but that would have been my number one and two. I would have gone Chris Beard number one, and I would have said Matt Painter number two, with a case that I think if somebody wanted to really make a strong case for Painter, I would prefer Beard, but I wouldn't really offer much pushback because, if Purdue, you know, Klein hits a free throw against Virginia, well, then Purdue is here in the Final Four as well. So, that's also, you know, something that you can look at. Rick Bozich, WDRB and WDRB.com is our guest on ESPN 680 105.7. What do you make of Kentucky and Cal? They end up losing to Auburn on Sunday. A lot of talk, a lot of discussion this week. What do you take away from that game? And maybe the conversation nationally that's gone on with Calipari.
Well, I mean, I wrote after the game what I think is that, you know, it's another game that there should be no embarrassment in getting out in the Elite Eight. It's a tough tournament. You saw what happened to Coach K with, you know, three of the top five players in the country. It happens. But, you know, this has happened now multiple times where he's lost to teams that theoretically, you know, like in a 4-7 series, they would win. And Auburn losing their best inside guy game the day before, and Kentucky having beaten them at Auburn by close game by two, and then beating them by 27 without Reed Travis. I mean, for them to lose to Auburn it's a disappointing end of the season. And I think what happened when what showed up was that as good as Kentucky's guards were all year, they showed their youth in that game, and that Auburn's guys were more aggressive, and they were more physical, and they were more determined, and they imposed their will upon Kentucky, and they didn't hit their usual number of threes, but they drove and shared the ball some. And, you know, I would say that neither Hero nor Higgins nor or Quickly played close to their best game, and that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think the, you know, I talked about on Monday and Tuesday a couple of the, I guess, criticisms, if you want to call it that, of Calipari was, you know, rotationally. And one of those is, you know, Ashton Higgins with 14 turnovers, or excuse me, 7 turnovers in the game out of the 14 that he had or that Kentucky had in the entire game. It wasn't like, you know, he was creating for others and was taking chances and he was getting layups when he wasn't turning the ball over. There were a lot of things that Quickly wasn't turning the ball over, and I think was kind of doing the same thing that Ashton Higgins was. That was what was a little confusing to me, is that against Auburn, like the one thing is don't turn the ball over, don't turn the ball over, don't turn the ball over. And I think if Kentucky just would have had, you know, single-digit turnovers, I think they win. I think we're talking about Kentucky-Virginia right now, and it wasn't the case, and I think it drives home guard play even to a certain degree, even more than what we already know about guard play in the tournament.
I have no doubt about it. I mean, they rose to the challenge against Wofford, and they played veteran guards against Houston, and they did fine, and Hero made the clutch shot, and sometimes it just doesn't work out. But in that game, you know, they get out to an 11-point lead in the first half, and then Auburn brought it back to two, and then Kentucky, I think Higgins hit a three right before the half. You got a two-possession lead at halftime, a little bit of breathing room, feel good about yourself. But in the second, fairly early in the second half, Auburn sort of said, okay, we're going to be the aggressor. We're going to be the team that, you know, is going to push back. And Kentucky's guards really, didn't answer the bell. I mean, they didn't make shots, really. I mean, Quigley was 1-for-6. Hero didn't make a ton of shots. As you mentioned, Higgins had a bunch of – he had live ball turnovers, too, that killed him on a couple of possessions. And you kind of saw a couple of times he made a turnover and he kind of hung his head, and you know, you could tell it was getting to him. And I don't know if Calipari needed to call another timeout or what it was, but, a junior and a senior guard who were just little tough – dudes, they won that game for Auburn, in my opinion. Harper and Brown, they're not NBA guys, but they're really good college players.
Yeah, I think that's where the frustration comes in, is that Kentucky's better, more talented than Auburn, and it just didn't work out.
They got so much out of P.J. Washington, and going into the weekend, it was like, I'm not even sure P.J. Washington's going to play, and then he played a decent amount, in the Houston game was very important, but in that game, you couldn't even tell he was injured. I mean, he was a sub. He ended up playing, 39 minutes? Is that what it was? He played a ton of minutes, and Travis played all but 15 seconds. So, you got your best player back and playing his absolute best, and you don't win. That's a disappointment. And as I wrote the day before, overall I thought it was one of Cal's better coaching jobs, because he had a team that got rocked the first game, and that could have been, a big psychologically an issue for that team, and they overcame it, and they lost to Seton Hall, and he didn't have all the recruits he normally has. He had maybe a slight cut below, but they ended up, earning a 2 seed and having a great tournament draw. And they just didn't perform, and he just didn't have the answers on Sunday against Auburn. And that's going to go down. I think he's had a number of stingy defeats. The Wisconsin one will be the worst, but I think this one's right up there with the West Virginia loss in 2010.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. I mean, it's that 2010 team was more talented than this team is, but their advantages against Auburn were just so vast. I feel if they play that game, 9 more times. Like I said before the game started, that I gave Kentucky a 60% or 70% chance of winning, and I know that KenPom said it was closer, but I'm like, if Kentucky doesn't turn the ball over, they've got such advantages. And I'm not saying that, Auburn won one of the 3 times they would have won in that game, definitely, because PJ had 28. You mentioned that. I mean, he was dynamite in that game, but I think it was probably one of the 4 games that Auburn would have won if they played that thing 10 times. I think Kentucky still is the better team, but we see that all the time, that the better team doesn't win. How do you sort of weigh then? You said that this was, going into the game, one of Cal's better coaching jobs on the season, but in that game there was certainly a lot left to be desired and some real criticism there. So how do you weigh the what was one of his better jobs in your mind on the season versus one of those games that you scratch your head and wonder how Kentucky didn't end up on top?
Well, I mean, because we all know of the, the boisterous things he says and the standards that he sets and what really is considered acceptable at Kentucky, that, I mean, I think it's a, it brings the season down a notch from, the way everybody looked at it going in. I mean, it wasn't like they were playing, 1 seed or a 3 seed. They're playing the 5 seed that was down its best inside player, and they lost a game that, I think if they played the best of 7 series, Kentucky wins it in 6 games. But a neutral court game, I'm just stunned they didn't win the game. And the narrative got changed quickly because the UCLA thing popped up, and he got the contract extension,
right?
But I think when people step away from it, they'll look back at it and say, man, that was a lost opportunity. Especially, I don't know if it's worse or better for them if Auburn wins or loses. I mean, if Auburn gets drilled by Virginia, people are going to be frustrated. But if Auburn goes on and wins the title, people are also going to be frustrated. So that's to be determined.
If Auburn hits only 7 threes against Virginia, they've got 0 chance to win. I'm not trying to be overly negative or simplistic about it.
It's just
that Virginia doesn't turn the ball over. Auburn, when they don't cause a turnover, they don't really stop you. And by causing turnovers, they can create easier offense for them, and they can get out and run, and those guards can create and even pull up from 3 because they've got the ultimate green light from Bruce Pearl. So if they're shooting the way they did against Kentucky, and they also lack the inside presence, I don't know how they score the way that they did on Kentucky if they're not getting turnovers from Virginia and getting out and getting easy buckets. That's why if they're hitting threes, then hey, they're going to be in that game. But if they're cold the way they were in the first half and They're not causing Virginia turnovers. I think it's one of those to where Virginia is just it's gonna, they're going to win, and maybe by double digits. And I don't think that's going to be the case. But if they're not knocking down threes, I think Virginia's walking into the national championship game.
Yeah, it just feels like this is Virginia's year to me in many ways. And I know that they are life and death to beat Purdue and didn't start well against Gardner-Webb. But I think what they went through, not only last year, but the last few years, and they've got a veteran group that's been tested pretty hard all season, and their metrics are good. And, you know, to me, it feels like Virginia's year.
Visiting with Rick Bozich, we'll get to that winner. Don't jump ahead, Rick. We'll get to the winner in the Final Four. From WDRB and WDRB.com. What do you you have an overall theme of this Final Four, your view of these four teams, Michigan State knocking off Duke, and Texas Tech is here, and Chris Beard certainly getting a lot of accolades and Coach of the Year, and Tony Bennett finally breaks through, and Bruce Pearl from a year ago, we didn't know if he would ever coach this year, and now he's in the Final Four. But there's not a lot of sizzle, so I think that's clearly one of the themes or storylines of this tournament is there's some good teams, well-coached teams, but the sizzle that we've seen in Final Fours isn't really there. So what do you make of this Final Four and these four teams that are left standing?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have a hard time selling it, I think, beyond, you know, just relatively interested basketball fans. I mean, guys who don't follow college basketball at all, other than Izzo, I'm not sure they really know many of the characters. They don't know Beard, and they might know Bennett a little just because, you know, they lost a game last year as a 1-16, and they might know Pearl because he was on ESPN, you know, with Greenberg as an analyst during that time that he sat out 5 years for the show cause, but I think as a basketball fan, when I think of this Final Four, is that shows there's so many ways, different ways to get this done. And the way it's gotten done this year is with, you know, older guys who really weren't, you know, a lot of four-star and even three-star recruits. And you got a lot of guys in there who weren't even, you know, that good. You got Culver, I think, was 326 or 336 in his class. And you look at, you know, the Virginia guys were all top 100 guys, but the bottom half of the top 100 and Brown was 300-some, so, I mean, you don't have a ton of NBA guys in this, so it's more about team stuff, and that's not really sexy to sell on television, but to me, that's what it is.
Oh, yeah, I think these are four good teams, and I think they're four really well-coached teams, so I'm excited from that standpoint. And I think there would be – look, it's also name brand. I mean, college basketball is name brand, and it's coach name brand. And if Zion were here, certainly that would be a different level. And if Gonzaga was here, the entire Japanese media would be here – or Rui, excuse me, with Gonzaga, the Japanese media would be here as well. If Kentucky were here, they maybe have the biggest beat in all of college basketball, so they would all be here. So, like, there was certainly an opportunity on that final weekend of Kentucky and Duke and Gonzaga and maybe even Purdue with Carson Edwards, who was just phenomenal in his performance. But these are four teams that earned it, four teams that did what they had to do down the stretch to make the winning plays and find themselves here. So I don't want to take anything away from them individually and say, well, I wish it was this team or that team, but it's going to be hard to sort of sell the national storylines of this Final Four other than, hey, it's the Final Four. We're going to crown a national champion. Rick Bozich, WDRB and WDRB.com. Rick, Final Four time for you. Four quick questions. Just tell me the first thing that pops in your head if you are ready.
Yes, sir.
All right. Percentage odds you would have put on Nick being the first Petrino to find another job?
I didn't know he got one. What did he get?
Yeah, he is the running backs coach at Tennessee Martin, maybe? Tennessee Martin, I think it is.
Tennessee Martin. Competition between him and L.D. Scott and his dad?
But just his dad, I guess. Him and his dad.
Percentage chances than that for me would have been 25.
Okay. All right. Who's a coach you would give a lifetime contract to?
Mike Krzyzewski.
Coach K? So you like two
Nick
Final
Saban.
Fours in 15 years? Nick that's
Saban.
That's a pretty good answer. Nick Saban, yeah. You know what? I was only thinking basketball, but I like that. That's the answer. The answer is Nick Saban. The answer is Saban. Very well done. Who wins on Monday night? Who over who, I should say?
We're going straight to Monday night. I'll go
yes.
Auburn over Texas Tech. I'm sorry. Virginia over Texas Tech.
Okay, I was going to say you're picking Auburn. Interesting. No, Kermit Davis picked Auburn.
Virginia over Texas Tech.
All right. Virginia over Texas Tech. And then last but not least, where's it at? I wrote it down right here. Oh, no. I can't find what I wrote down specifically for what you and I were talking about. All right, well, now I'm just going to have to come up with one off the top of my head. Let's see. Last one. Final four for Rick Bozich. Who gets the UCLA job? That's a terrible one. It's going to be Jamie Dixon. God, I wrote it down. It was right here. It was really good, I swear. Very excited about it.
Let me give you a dinner recommendation, Minneapolis. J.D. Hoyt.
J.D. Hoyt?
J.D. Hoyt.
J.D. Hoyt. All right, very good. Dinner recommendation. All right. Who's the best coach in the game right now? I'll ask you that one.
In college
Best college basketball coach in the game right now. Currently, in 2019.
What Tony Bennett's done in the ACC over the last 3 or 4 years and the way he's done it with the system and taking the blowback he's got from some of his bad losses, I'll go with Tony Bennett.
All right. And I guarantee you in the commercial break here, I'm going to find the question that I'd written out.
Absolutely.
Rick Bozich, WDRB and WDRB.com. Rick, as always, you're the man. Appreciate it, sir. We'll be looking and watching and reading and all that stuff as the Final Four gets here, some college basketball as well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jason.
All right, there's Rick Bozich from WDRB and WDRB.com. I mean, I've got, like, papers everywhere. Jeez. Maybe keep track of one of the papers that you were going to ask them. You know, maybe do that. I do want to send a big shout-out to Hagerty Drivers Club with Westwood One and their coverage. Love cars? Join Hagerty Drivers Club, the world's largest community for car enthusiasts. You'll save money on car stuff. Get behind the wheel at members' events. Get insider guidance on car values and more. Sign up at Hagerty.com. Something else you can sign up for. Magic. I am going to be paying a lot more attention to the horse racing, to the betting this season. I have opened up a TVG account. I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm excited about it. I've opened up a TVG account. Don't tell my wife, by the way, please.
I'm very familiar with that story. Yes,
if she asked, just don't tell her that. And very cool things that are going on with a TVG. Keeneland, you know, coming up, and I know everybody's going out there Saturday. Drew Diener's talking about it on the air today. He's going to be heading out to Keeneland, all of that stuff. And if you're looking to get into the action, TVG.com, the place to go for all the pre-Derby qualifier races. Certainly the Bluegrass coming up on Saturday. Hey, Mike DeCourcy's walking around. How about that, huh? I wonder what he's doing over here. Probably going to do an interview or something. I'll tell him about TVG as well. So we've got that at TVG.com. Download the TVG app today, or you can go to www.tvg.com/Jason for this exclusive offer. We got an offer for those signing up at TVG. TVG is going to double your first deposit up to $100 within 15 days. And there's more. If you make your first deposit of $100 or more, TVG is going to give you an extra $20 free to bet on. So you play with actually $220 for the $100 that you deposit. That is with the code Jason. So download the TVG app, or you can go to tvg.com/Jason as well. So I'll be doing that, checking out all the things. And I know we got prep races coming up on Saturday. That'll be a lot of fun. I'll be texting Drew Blankenbaker too. All right, man, what's the deal with this one? John Salzman, of course, he probably won't tell me who he has as a winner. And then after it's over, he'll tell me he had the winner, and it'll be very upsetting.
What about Scooper?
All of that. Scooper, I'll ask Scooper as well. I'll get his thoughts on
Scooper
it. All
Bean,
of those guys.
Dave Stahl, big horse racing guy.
Exactly. I'm going to use everybody. All right. I'm going to use everybody, and they're going to help
not
me
Andy.
Through this. No, not Andy.
Lock.
But I'm going to use everybody else. I will do that. It is the most exciting time in horse racing. We know that. It's underway. Sign up with TVG today. Make a first deposit. They'll match it up to $100 within 15 days. And your first deposit of $100 or more, you get an extra $20. Do not miss out on the exclusive offer. Download the TVG app or go to tvg.com/Jason. I will let you know, age and residency restrictions apply. Void where prohibited by law. See full terms and conditions at www.tvg.com/Jason. We'll take a timeout, come back. We'll talk with Clark Kellogg next.
You are listening to The Zone Podcast. Check out Jason Anderson weekdays 3 to 6 only on ESPN 680 and ESPNLouisville.com.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.